Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares down at the open this morning, tracking losses in global markets amid worries over geopolitical uncertainty in the Middle East. Now, in early trade, the Straits Times Index was down 0.3% to 3,175 points after some 39 million securities changed hands in the broader market. Now, as we know, closing numbers are still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen right now. The Straits Times Index down 0.98% at 3,152 points. In terms of value turnover, we are looking at 1.55 billion Sing dollars. Gainers stroke losers, 205 versus 424. The five movers by value, we've got here DBS, UOB, Singtel, OCBC and Seatrium. Heavily traded securities included Seatrium, Singtel and Genting Singapore. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have Singapore Airlines, the national carrier, and its low-cost arm Scoot moved 3.3 million passengers together in March. That is up 20.7% from the previous year. Now, elsewhere, from more on TSMC's earnings to China's Q1 GDP numbers, more corporate and international headlines remain in focus. And joining me here in the studio is James Chiu, CIO, Southeast Asia and India at HSBC, Global Private Banking and Wealth. As usual, James, welcome.
Happy to be here.
Great to have you in studio with us. And let's start with the Singapore stock market as usual, right? How has the STI Fed so far looking at broader concerns in global markets, fluctuations and oil prices as well?
Well, it's not very surprising that STI sort of traced very much what's happening in global markets, a very kind of a cautious mood in that sense.
Yeah, I see. In terms of companies to watch, right, James, we do have Singapore Airlines, the national carrier, and Scoot together. They moved 3.3 million passengers in March, up 20% from the previous year. That being said, it's counted down some 1% today, right? Broadly speaking, do you think Singapore's tourism recovery then is in full swing? Is it to what was expected?
Well, I think the March numbers are good. Essentially, you also have to take account the Taylor Swift effect, right?
Oh,
so that's
yes.
Lots of kind of activity during that month. But going forward, I think there's still many concerts in the pipeline. I think you need tourism to kind of be strong again. I think the prospects looks good, but of course, March is an exceptional month.
Okay. Now, March is an exceptional month. So going ahead, as we look to the next holiday season, we are now in April, next holiday season coming in June, right? How much of a leg room do we have till then? Do you think Singapore's tourism recovery is already at full swing?
Yeah, well, I think the tourism recovery is going on fairly well. We have a strong early part of the year due to concerts, etc. But I think there will be general Southeast Asia travel, and of course, Singapore would benefit from it.
Right. Across the region, James, now we want to look at what's happening in China. The economy grew faster than expected in the fourth quarter. If we look at data by the National Bureau of Statistics, GDP up 5.3% in January to March from the year earlier, which is comfortably above expectations in a Reuters poll for this increase of just 4.6%. How would you read into the numbers?
Yeah, well, I think it's going in the right direction. There is some recovery, but of course, it's not firing at all cylinders in that sense that property market is still a drag, but that drag is less now, I would say. And also, industrial activity is starting to kind of improve, early signs of that, given that improvement in global trade. So, yeah, I think China is slowly picking up. I don't think it's firing on all cylinders, but at least things are moving in the right direction.
Mm. And since you mentioned about industrials, right, today we do have some numbers that came along with the GDP, separate numbers though, on factory output and retail sales. That showed momentum slowing down. So how should we read into the Chinese economy? Is it still relatively looking good going forward despite those concerns?
Yeah, well, it will be bumpy, I think, in terms of the data. It won't be a straight line up. You will expect bumps, especially when it comes to retail sales, for example. It's slightly lower than expectation, similarly with industrial production. But by and large, I think there is still a case whereby the authorities would actually ease policy to support growth. And I think those data still show that that's going to be the case. So we really need to watch how these data pan out in the months ahead. And I suspect there should be a stabilization in China.
Right. Now, staying in the region, James, there appears to be billions up for grab in the Tokyo real estate sector. I believe we are looking at a huge gap of, what, 22 trillion yen or 195 billion Sing dollars by one estimate. And that is between how companies value their real estate assets on their books versus what those same properties would fetch if they were sold in the current market. Now, what this means is that some activist funds, they are pressuring companies to sell their holdings in them. While not exactly related to this, right, could Japan be the next place for investment holding firms to cash out or divest their holdings to generate cash flows?
Well, I think the game changer in Japan is that inflation is back into the system. So that means that that there's going to be much more attention when it comes to the economy. There's going to be more consumption. And also, I think investors are starting to look at Japan as an investment destination. And of course, there are a lot of corporate reforms ongoing that forces companies to be a bit more efficient with the capital and to kind of provide more efficiency when it comes to shareholder returns. So I think all these are starting to put attention on Japan's assets, and I think clearly there will be ongoing repricing given that Japan has been in a deflationary mode for the last few decades. So now, if with some inflation in the system, you will see some reprieve. We have seen that in the equity market and also likely in the real estate market.
I see. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with James Chiu, Chief Investment Officer, Southeast Asia and India at HSBC Global Private Banking and Wealth. Now let's take a look at some corporate headlines, James. Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company TSMC, it is expected to report this 5% rise in first quarter profit on Thursday, thanks to strong demand. Now, some analysts say a $6.6 billion US subsidies for TSMC's new plants in Arizona that could help maintain its lead in advanced process technologies. More broadly speaking, how far will chip makers be bolstered by such subsidies looking ahead, looking at how Japan, looking at how US are attracting those chip firms?
Yeah, well, I mean, the trend is towards a sort of reshoring, re-globalization. And you do see networks, clusters forming around important strategic industries, whether it's chip making, renewable energy, and there are subsidies by various countries. So I think this trend looks like it's set to continue. It's alongside making supply chains more resilient. I think especially when it comes to AI chips, this is something that's going to be quite crucial in the years ahead. So that whole reshoring trend, I think, will continue.
Don't mind me asking this, right? We have seen the AI frenzy play out over the past few months, right? How far can it go? Will there come a breaking point? And if so, what's next for these chip makers looking at the demand for general electronics right now?
Yeah, well, I think the AI trend is a multi-year, multi-decade trend. Yeah. In terms of stock market, yes, it's gone up a lot. There will be pullbacks along the way, but I think there is still room for more improvements. So far, we've seen AI enablers, like it or not, the chip makers, data centers doing very well in terms of the infrastructure associated with AI, the cloud software companies.
Yes.
So I think the next phase would be the AI adopters, basically non-tech companies using the various AI models. That would kind of take a while for companies to get used to it. And I think companies with competitive advantage that could employ and use AI in the most effective way, I think those would stand out.
Don't mind me asking this once again, trying my luck. Do you think investors should hedge against the risk of AI, though, should AI not turn out the way that it should be?
Yeah, I think it's always important for investors to really look at quality companies. That means companies that are at the top of each category or even each sectors. And I think it's very important for that in order to play the AI team. There are many, many companies that are in this whole bucket. So I think it's always important to kind of select the leaders in that sense, especially for retail investors.
I see. And let's end off by talking about AI as well. Microsoft said it will invest $1.5 billion in UAE's top AI firm, G42. At the same time, the chief of Google's AI business, DeepMind, said that the company will spend more than $100 billion developing AI technology over time. Lots of opportunities there, but what do you think the gestation period for AI to generate returns will look like?
Yeah, well, I think there are certain AI that can already be applied. I mean, a lot of co-pilot programs, whether it's increasing productivity in daily work. I think those are already at a stage where it can be already applied. And there are also AI technology that's going to be applied in healthcare. Those things have been working quite well. And I think there will be more improvements along the way. And of course, the next level would be how AI would be to improve automation with industrials, with robotics. Those will be the next leg to watch out for.
Wow, lots happening all around the world at this time. Well, thanks a lot, James. As always, that was James Chiu, Chief Investment Officer, Southeast Asia and India at HSBC Global Private Banking and Wealth. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Pleasure to be here.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.